ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Global roaming. We did try to stay weekly. The news said no. So 5 days a week it is. I'm Hamish McDonald.
I'm Geraldine Doogue, and now joined by esteemed colleagues Latika Burke and Kylie Morris. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fuel reserves have been tapped, a fuel task force established and a coordinator appointed. And the government assures us there's just as much supply coming into the country as there was before the Iran war began. So why are some regional service stations unable to find supply? And what happens if this crisis drags on much longer? We've heard a lot from the government. We haven't heard as much from the petroleum industry about what's going on. So that's what I'm keen to explore. I'm David Spears on Ngunnawal Country at Parliament House in Canberra. Welcome to Insiders on Background. Malcolm Roberts is the Chief Executive of the Australian Institute of Petroleum, which represents the big refiners and fuel suppliers, Ampol, BP, Mobil and Viva Energy. Malcolm Roberts, welcome.
Thank you, David.
So I guess the big question being raised by everyone right now is that if we do have the same supply we had, you know, some weeks ago before all of this began in the Middle East, why have prices shot up so much and why are some service stations unable to find supply at all?
Well, there's two answers to that two-part question. The first one is that we're a price taker in the global market. We have very, very little local production. We still have two refineries producing about 20% of our needs, but 80% of the fuel we use in Australia is imported as a refined product, and the rest of the volumes that we're using are from overseas largely too. So about only 4% of the fuel we use in Australia is Australian crude refined in Australia. So we're a price taker in the international market. And I'll give you an example of the Singapore price for diesel. It doubled in the first fortnight of this conflict. So it went up sharply. Petrol hasn't quite gone as quickly, but it's still substantially up. Mm. And those prices are flowing through to us now.
But should they, when the diesel presumably that's being sold right now at the Bowser in Australia was bought on contract some weeks ago?
Well, there's a couple of things that happen. Normally, the industry is caught up in terms of petrol, a price discount cycle. So you will see the retail prices move. There'll be times when margins are compressed and people are trying to achieve volume. Then there's a time of sort of recovering profitability, if you like, by raising the prices. It's a bit of a frustration, obviously, for motorists because they can see prices move.
But this is more than just making up for periods where they might have discounted. This is a price right now that's way above that.
That's true. But so you've had a combination of things. In the petrol market, we're at the trough of the discount cycle just when the war began. Brent was about $72. We'd seen an appreciation of the currency from about November onwards, which was making our dollar go further. So that was quite a good spot for us to be in. In fact, we had the lowest prices we'd had for more than 3 years with that combination of a favourable currency, a flat price for the international oil, and as well the discount cycle. That's for petrol. Diesel doesn't really have a discount cycle. 75% of diesel sales are business to business. Mostly we're talking about bulk customers, people who buy a lot of diesel, usually on contract. But the price doubling in the space of those first 2 weeks, and in fact, that's using a weekly average measure, which understates the actual price movement too. So we saw a huge movement in the international price, and then we saw, the second part of the answer, a tremendous rush to obtain fuel. So every fuel supply was absolutely hammered with increased demand.
Volumes was far higher. Was that across the country, or was it more in the regional areas with farmers are the primary industry wanting to fill up storage tanks? Or was this in the cities as well?
Well, it was very, very intense in some of the regional centres because we're getting into a stage where we might be beginning a harvest period or preparation for putting in a winter crop. You've also got the huge needs of the trucking industry along the major trunk routes. And so some people would say that I haven't used the term panic buying. We'd probably say forward buying. People could see how the price was quickly changing. They buy a lot of fuel. It's a key part of their business. And so people were coming to the terminals and getting as much diesel as they could. And that went on for the best part of 10 days or so. We saw one large independent wholesaler retailer actually just leave the market. And we've also seen my members, the major suppliers, about a week or so ago, moved to what's called 100% allocations, which is to say they had to prioritise their own customers, their regular customers, and not sell any additional volume.
So this gets to the point that the ACCC is now looking at, doesn't it? They've announced that they're launching an investigation into allegations of anti-competitive conduct by Ampol, BP, Mobil and Viva, your members.
That's right.
And it says it's received reports concerning diesel availability to independent wholesalers and distributors servicing regional and rural areas. So just explain to us, why can't those independents get supply?
Well, I think the key problem here is that no one anticipated this sort of demand. The industry is very good at forecasting the regular changes in demand, which sometimes it's seasonal, sometimes it's just related to other factors. So the industry forecasts demand, gets supply into the country in advance of that demand, and hopefully everything balances out. When you have a crisis like this in the Middle East and you have a sudden movement in the price and people are becoming very, very nervous about the cost and continuity of supply, especially if they're big buyers, big bulk customers, there's a strong incentive to just rush out and get what you need. However, you've also got a couple other complications. The first thing is that some supply is obviously secured by contract. So you have volumes which you've secured, you've got take or pay or other contractual arrangements which ensure you're confident you have supply, and your wholesaler presumably has firmed up that supply of contracts of their own. Then there'll be the people who rely on the spot market, which is a very safe thing to do.
This is the independents mainly.
Well, this would be a mix of people. People have a mix of spot and contracted supply.
Right.
But there will also be buyers who will not have contracts. They'll be doing just-in-time purchasing when they need it. They might not want to commit to taking particular volumes. They may feel that it's cheaper and easier to get the fuel when they need it, especially if they don't have storage and they don't want to hold a whole lot of fuel. So you've got customers who've got contracted supply through the majors and other wholesalers, and they're getting their full contracted volumes. There'll be customers who haven't had that secure supply, have relied on the spot market, and are finding it difficult to find the volumes they need.
So they're the service stations that don't have supply right now.
Yeah. Well, I also think there's a distribution challenge too, because that first 2 or 3 weeks of intense buying, where essentially all the spare, uncontracted fuel in the market was being sold, the distribution system had to work overtime to keep up with that demand. And so it's becoming difficult in some areas to keep the supply flowing through, partly because there's no longer the large volume that was the buffer that the industry's always relied on, but also because the distributors, have been running flat out for 3 weeks.
But I'm sure there'd be people thinking, if we've still got all this supply coming in, we're not at the point where the ships have stopped coming. Sure, there's been, I know you don't like the word panic buying, but forward buying, people have stored up. But we've still got supply there. Why can't that supply get to those independent operators, whether they're buying on the spot market or not? Why can't that supply get to them?
Well, a lot of that supply is getting to them, especially if they've contracted it. But I think we'll have to wait and see, because I haven't seen the details of the allegations, so I'm not sure what's actually being said.
But there are some servos that don't have any supply.
Sure. But first of all, that can happen under normal circumstances anyway. It's probably more the question about how quickly they can be resupplied. So how long are they out of diesel or petrol, whatever it might be. That's the first thing. And undoubtedly with the distribution problems we've been having, it's taking a bit longer to get some of that supply. Also, the broad supply question. I can only speak about the 85% of the volumes supplied by my members. So I don't know the situation of other importers. And we have certainly seen, one party exit the industry at the moment. I'm not sure about those volumes.
So the government, the minister says all the ships are still coming, the supply hasn't been affected yet. And we'll get to what happens from mid-April, when it's a little less certain. But just bottom line on the whole ACCC allegation and investigation, at least that they're looking into, can you sit here and say there's been no anti-competitive conduct, no price gouging either?
Well, I think we've got a very competitive market. We've had the ACCC monitor the market closely. They put out a regular quarterly report. The AIP puts out a weekly report that will tell you what the wholesale prices are, what the retail prices are, what the international benchmarks are, and a set of graphs that show how our local prices track international prices. We've seen a huge explosion in the cost of obtaining fuel. It hasn't just been the wholesale cost, it's also been shipping and distribution because of the disruption around the world at the moment. I'm not surprised to see higher prices under those circumstances. Mm. All the ingredients are there. Now, the allegations, as yet, I don't know what they are. I trust they'll be investigated thoroughly by the Commission, but I don't believe that we have a market where that sort of behaviour is occurring. It's a very competitive market. I can understand the frustrations for people who want to sell more fuel but don't have it to hand. I can understand that in the past it would be relatively easy to obtain that volume through spot purchases. However, we've also seen this huge rush to buy fuel, which has dried up the spot market. I don't know what the business strategies of the various wholesalers are. I'm sure there's a mix of strategies. I know some of them have got secure contracted supply and it's business as usual, albeit with the restrictions that you can't readily find new supply beyond what you already have contracted. So we'll wait and see what the ACCC comes up with.
Mm. But as far as you're concerned, your members aren't price gouging?
I've seen no evidence of that. Our prices have been matching what is in the market. The prices match what you would expect when you see the international price move. There's a tremendous amount of transparency around fuel prices. There's not many products in the country where you can say, I can tell you exactly the price at every single retail point of every product.
So what happens if we do get, if this crisis continues for a few more weeks, we get to mid-April, mm-hmm. which is when Chris Bowen is saying it's a little less certain whether Malaysia, South Korea, Singapore are still going to be sending fuel our way. What happens at that point, do you think?
Well, I think part of the conversation around mid-April just reflects the fact that the industry's usual practice is to book cargoes 2 months in advance or so. So, there's a rolling supply of vessels coming to Australia with fuel. They're under term contracts usually, although we have often had spot cargoes, not very easy to obtain now. Mm. So by mid-April, it's just another point in that rolling program. The key thing to be watching, and we're watching this very closely, is the policy announcements from government and other countries. So we've seen China apparently decide to restrict exports.
Yeah, it's a little confusing.
There's no real official announcement.
Right.
I haven't seen an official announcement. The claim was last week that if you hadn't cleared customs by the end of the Wednesday, your cargo wasn't going to be released. Now, we haven't had a situation yet where that's been tested, so we're waiting to see.
And what about the others, Malaysia, Singapore, South Korea?
Well, Korea is very important for us. It's the largest single supplier of our diesel. It accounts for about 30% of our diesel imports. The good news is that they've said, yes, we'll cap exports, but we'll cap them on a monthly basis on 2025 levels. So that's ensuring us the volume that we've taken from Korea.
So we should, in April, May, June, still be able to get what we got from South Korea in April, May, June last year?
Well, I think so. That certainly seems to be the indication from the Korean government, unless they change their mind. But the other side of the coin, it's not just government decisions. Mm. The longer this disruption goes, the more risk we face. We're at the end of a very long global supply chain. We have refineries in the region that are going to have to conserve their crude oil stocks, and some of them are cutting back production to do that. Some of them will be successful in finding replacement supply. Others may be operating off what they have to hand. And so we're already beginning to see production cuts. We're already beginning to see a volumes drop. And the consequence might be governments deciding to prioritise their domestic market over exports.
Which, yeah, let's hope we don't get to that
Absolutely.
Scenario. But if we do get to that position, the Australian government, the minister, could then trigger the Liquid Fuel Emergency Act. That would give him the
right.
power to what, direct supply
yes.
here? Are
you well, prepared for well, it won't create supply.
No,
because
direct where it goes?
Yes, yes. Mm. The government does have those residual powers to make those sort of decisions. It's probably a bit of a moot point if you don't have adequate supply.
No. But given what we do have, and we've still got some left mm-hmm. in the reserve, obviously,
yes.
it would be able to direct where that goes. It would have the power then over things like what purchase limits and fuel rationing and so on.
I'm not sure how far the powers extend. They've got a priority for defence and health under the existing
right.
policy. But I'm sure there'll be, when we think about it, there are so many other essential needs mm. for fuel. We would certainly hope not to get to that point. We haven't had any advice yet from our overseas suppliers that the cargoes that are contracted and scheduled aren't coming.
So it doesn't sound like you're panicking at this stage.
Well, I always put the caveat that that could change very quickly. If we had a decision by a major supplying country that they were going to stop exports or restrict exports, you know, we'd be very vulnerable to that because we don't have a tremendous number of alternatives. The industry is tapping some new sources. We're bringing a couple of cargoes from the Gulf Coast to the United States. That's not going to be a cheap form of supply.
And what is that? Is that diesel or is that petrol?
Oh, I think it's diesel, but I'd have to check with the importer.
Have we done that before?
Not really, no. From the West Coast, yes. We have some trade with the United States, but to pluck it from Texas or Louisiana is unusual. We access about 20 countries for different products at different times. But of course, we're largely taking product from five or six of the major refining countries in our region.
In terms of whether Australia could be more self-sufficient when it comes to our fuel supply, there's already some talk about, well, should we drill for oil? Do we need more refining capacity beyond the two that we've now got left? What do you think? Is there more that Australia should be doing to be more self-sufficient?
Well, I think having more local oil production would help.
So drilling for oil here?
Well, yes. I think that would help. This is not necessarily me speaking on behalf of my members. It's just a private view because when we look at it, most of the crude oil we're processing in our refineries is imported. So refineries do give us a little bit more flexibility. But if we had a greater supply of crude oil for our local refineries, you know, then we'd be a little bit more self-sufficient. But I wouldn't want to overstate the volumes we could do. The refineries we have at the moment do about 20%. Our fuel supply.
So do we need more refineries? Or is that a difficult one for you, given your members?
Well, it's difficult because you need scale. Fuel is a volume game. So you really do need scale. And what we've seen across the developed world, if you like, is a lot of those refineries have become uncompetitive. They're old, they require significant capital reinvestment, and the scale of production is pretty modest when you compare what's available in India, China, and other places.
And once this crisis is over, and hopefully that's soon, whatever new refineries established would be competing with those in Malaysia, Singapore, South Korea.
Well, yes. I mean, but they would be competing on an import parity price basis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fuel prices in Australia have always been on import parity price, even when we had significant local production of oil and significant local refining capacity.
So, final one I wanted to get your thoughts on is the fuel reserve. Mm-hmm. We have been keeping, we've dipped into it about 20% of it now.
Yes.
But we keep, 30 something days?
About a month's supply of the three main fuels.
The IEA recommends a 90-day supply. I know there's differences around what's counted on water or on land and so on. Do we need to increase our reserve one way or another, though?
I think that's going to be a very hotly debated issue once we get through this crisis. It comes at a cost. Whenever you're storing fuel, it comes at a cost. And there's certainly because you have to turn it over. It can't sit there indefinitely, and it's expensive to build the infrastructure. But if nothing else, the last few weeks has demonstrated just how we've become increasingly dependent for finished product coming into Australia. And, you know, the risks of disruption are there. We've often thought about other risks in the region, which might interfere with North Asian trade or other factors. And we haven't seen for a very, very long time a disruption in the Middle East.
Two final questions. Is the government handling this crisis appropriately so far?
Well, I think the key message that was out there originally or initially was not to worry about supply, that we've got the reserves, we've got continued shipments arriving, and to try and calm people, to take some of the pressure off the system. Because transferring 50,000 litres from a fuel retailer's tank to your tank somewhere else and not using it for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, as a precautionary measure, may make sense for the individual or business, but it doesn't help with trying to manage the system as a whole. So to try and ensure that people were not straining the system to breaking point by taking out fuel at that stage. It's a natural reaction when you could be concerned around future prices.
But you think the government messaging was appropriate?
Well, at that time, I think to say to people, we're seeing this pretty much unprecedented rush to buy. At that stage, that was the problem the system was trying to cope with. We were trying to cope with that. The price issues are largely out of our hands because we're following the international price. It's painful. No one really wants to see their staff being abused or for have the odium of being the people contributing.
Does that happen much?
Oh, there's certainly a bit of that happening, and there's certainly also a bit of fuel theft happening at service stations, other storage facilities. So there's a lot of anecdotal reports about that.
And other storage facilities?
Well, if people have often got to be careful about when they're storing on farm or other places. So some of the people I've spoken to have said people are taking extra precautions to make sure they're not going to have fuel theft. So the message around, there is supply. Don't be concerned about supply was absolutely right for that first period.
And now?
Well, now we always say we're cautiously confident. By that we mean we're monitoring what's happening overseas. We can see the longer that this crisis goes on, the more pressure we're under, the more we're relying on decisions being made elsewhere. And we can understand those decisions being made possibly at our expense when you consider that this flow of crude oil to those overseas refineries has been essentially cut off to a great degree. And they can't operate unless they have replacement supply. So the longer the crisis goes on, the more concerned we'll be. We haven't seen cargoes cancelled. If we see cargoes being cancelled, we'll be under more pressure. I can't speak in part for the other importers who account for 15% of the volume. If they are going to be under pressure, if they're going to lose cargoes, that'll affect the market. So it's precarious at the moment in the sense that it's a day-to-day proposition to see what decisions might be made elsewhere, whether this war will come to an end, whether fuel supply will be resumed, whether we'll see refineries beginning to cut back exports.
Well, the final question I was going to ask you, and you've probably answered it there, the message to motorists who are clearly feeling this greatly. Wondering why there are supply problems and prices are through the roof at their local service station. What is your message to them?
Well, very, very sorry for us all to be in this situation. Mm. We recognise it's having a huge impact on households, on our normal customers, on the state of the economy. The price is what it's going to be, unfortunately. We've seen the price flow through to Australia. It will still probably stay elevated for a while, even if this war comes to an end, because it will take some time to rebuild the supply chains.
Like a month? Or?
Well, the longer it goes on, the more sort of damage it does to crude oil stocks in the region. If we see refineries being turned off, that will be a serious problem. So the recovery...
That hasn't happened yet, though, has it?
We've got the reverse situation happening in two parts of the world. So in the Middle East, the problem is not so much producing... It's exporting. So some of those refineries are simply producing and storing it. Eventually they'll run out of storage and they'll have to make decisions about whether they wind back or cease production. They're not at that stage yet. On the other side of the world where you're reliant on that crude oil flowing, crude oil stocks are being depleted, searching for replacement supply but still being depleted. Some refineries are now operating at something like 50% output. If they get to the stage where they have to turn off refineries, it takes time and money to turn them back on. So when you're at the end of a long, long supply chain and you have those sort of disruptions and you've got each segment of that supply chain having to adjust and bring things back online, it does take time.
So that's an important warning. If the war were to end tomorrow, we could still have a period of some weeks before prices come back down.
Oh, well, I'm not sure about how quickly prices will move because there's always an element of confidence, when you're looking at forward prices. This goes back to the point that when people are uncertain and they're buying as much as they possibly can to give themselves some confidence around supply and future price, that in itself puts upward pressure on prices. And when the supply-demand balance is a little bit out of alignment and the demand is racing ahead, draining supply, that also tends to feed itself where people get concerned because they can see the price rising, which feeds more concern about forward buying. So it will take a little bit of while before we get back to what we would call business as usual. because there's a simple logistical challenge of bringing about that flow. The price could improve reasonably quickly if there was great confidence that this was going to be a secure return to normal business. But it will take some time, though, for that to flow through, because there will still be a lot of refineries that will need a lot more crude. Governments will probably have a conversation about how much more fuel they want to hold in their own reserves, and they might want to quickly buy that fuel too.
There's going to be a big debate coming out of this whenever this war comes to an end. But Malcolm Roberts, really appreciate you talking us through it all from the industry perspective. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, David. Thank you.
We'll have more on this on Sunday morning. Chris Bowen, the Energy Minister, is my guest for Insiders. Hope you can join us, 9 a.m. ABC TV on Sunday. And PK will be back with Politics Now in the feed on Monday. See you soon.
You're making us all feel very excited about being here.